So we do actually have a gatha today, but hopefully we get through all of it today, and then that'll be last for a couple of weeks. Okay, so we are holding on Peivov on the bays, six lines from the top. Okay, we left off yesterday. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah told us a case where Rabbi Yosef and Amasya's son hired workers. He arranged that he's going to give them meals, which we said yesterday by saying that implies that he's going to go beyond Minhag HaMedina, otherwise he wouldn't have had to say anything. And Rabbi Yochanan tells him that's no good. Then no matter how much you give them, even if you give them Kesudas Shlomo B'Shaita, it's not enough because they're B'nai Avraham and Yaakov, and Avraham did more for his guests than Shlomo HaMelech did for his. So that's what we're going to take up.
And what did he do more?
What he served them. That's what we're going to take up now. The memory of the Sudas. What does that have to do with anything? The amount of food he gave them. The memory of the Sudas that Avraham Avinu adifu b'dishleima. Are you going to tell me that the Suda that Avraham made for his three guests, the Malachim, is bigger than the Suda that Shlomo made for his guests? The Pasuk says, "Vayhi lechem Shlomo liyom echad." Shlomo's food for one day consisted of the following: Shloshim kor seilas v'shishim kor komach. 30 kur. We talked about a kur the other day in terms of in terms of weight it would be like 500 pounds of whatever the equivalent weight is when it comes to flour, whatever the equivalent weight to that volume of water, whatever, 30 times that of seilas. Doesn't mean that he ate it all. Wait, we're gonna see. The shishim kor kamach and 60 kor of regular flour. So this is fine flour, is the good stuff. Kamach is the regular flour, as we will see later on. Asara baka brim, 10 fat cattle. Vasara of esrim, really it's supposed to be baka rei, and 20 cattle that had been fat, that had pastured, that had grazed. Umeyatzon and 100 sheep. Levad me'ayil tzviv yachmur, besides for gazelles and deer and yachmur, some other kind of kosher wild animal. Ubarburim avusim, and fattened barburim. Barburim, Rashi says, means tanagurim, means chicken, and we'll discuss in a little bit what exactly barburim avusim means. We'll get back to that. The point is that
it was geese or ducks.
In modern Hebrew, barburim means, in modern Hebrew it does. It means some such
like a oak.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway.
In modern Hebrew.
Anyway, so that's the whole list. And Omer Gurion bar Astian b'shmei Rav, and Gurion bar Astian tells us in the name of Rav, that's not even the whole meal. Halolo la milon shel tabachim. All of this was all just used for the cook's dough. Whether the cook's dough, Rashi described it, they used to make a loaf-shaped piece of dough and put it on top of a pot, and that way the dough or the bread, whatever, would absorb the steam and the vapor and whatever from the cook dish so that it would taste better. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Halolo Tzikei Kedera, and Rabbi Yitzchak says that all of this stuff was used for Tzikei Kedera, which is some kind of side dish, like a pudding or something like that. And V'Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Elof Nashim Hayu L'Shlomo. Furthermore, Rabbi Yitzchak says we know Shlomo had 1,000 wives, or 300 wives and 700 concubines. And every one of them would make a meal of this size in her house every day. My time, because each one, why is each one? Because each one thinks maybe he'll eat by me today, and we need a lot of food. So you see, there's a tremendous amount of food there, far more than Avraham made for his guests. Well, I mean, I'm sure the rest of it didn't go to waste. The other 999 women stuff, Mestama, you know, they found people to eat it also. As I was going to say, there were a huge number of Jews, but wait. Whereas by Avraham, what does it say? Avraham ran to the cattle. He took a young calf that was tender and good. And Rabbi Hoda Amar Rav says, as we will discuss a little further down on the Amud, Ben Bokar Echad Rach Shnayim B'Toyev Shloisha. The adjectives in the pasuk, each adjective means that there was a different animal. Ben Bokar means one, Rach means there was a second one, and B'Toyev means there was a third one.
Three.
So just three, that's the question. So Lechura Shlomo Suda is far beyond whatever Avraham Avinu did. What are you saying, even if you made them Suda Shlomo B'Shaita, you haven't accomplished what you need to for B'nai Avraham and Sofiyako? Okay? The answer is you got to look at proportion. At how much per person. Hasam Tlosa Tori Tlosa Gabri. There what you have is Avraham prepared three calves for three people. One calf per person. Hasam Lechura Yisrael Yehuda. Whereas when it comes to Shlomo's meals, yes, there's a huge amount, yes, times 1,000, et cetera, et cetera. But proportionally, it may come out less. It was for the whole Yisrael, the 10 Shvatim, and Yehuda. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim kachol ha'shal tzvat hayom. They were as many as the sand by the seashore. So there's millions and then there's millions upon millions of Jews. So proportionately, all of this, no matter if there was a very big sudda, but proportionally, once you divide it down among all the Jewish people, and of course, when Shlomo ate, he wouldn't eat alone; he'd have a whole entourage with him. So therefore, proportionally, it may come out less.
Is that going to be what we have when Mashiach comes?
I guess I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a little Yosef. That's true. Yeah.
That's very big.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, getting back to, before we're going to get into analyzing the whole story of Abraham and the Malachim, before we do that, let's just finish up, though. The Gemara wants to finish up with an explanation of one detail from Shlomo's Pari. My Baburim Avusim. What is Baburim Avusim? Amar Rav, Sha'ov Sinais and Bar Kocham. So Rav says, Avusim literally means stuff. Like an Avus is a manger that animals eat from.
Right.
So, Rav says it means that these are chickens and maybe the other animals as well that were force fed, they were stuffed against their will, which is what you do in order to get very fat, very delectable creatures.
It sounds very kind, isn't it?
But when there's a purpose to it, then it's allowed. You do have to be careful to do it in the least tzar bal chayim way possible. But after all, the same way as you allow to sheft an animal, even though inevitably it causes a certain amount of pain for it, the same thing. When there's a purpose to it, then it's allowed. So, for example, in Shabbos, it talks about the dinim, about it as far as Hilchos Shabbos, that you're not allowed to force feed an animal like that on Shabbos. But during the week, there's no issue with it when you're doing it. Yeah. Okay.
Or Shabbos, they had a minhag to do fat liver, chicken liver.
So they have, but pate de foie gras, same thing from a goose. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway. Okay. Or Shmuel says, I agree that they were fattened up, but not that it was done by Kochan, but rather they did it themselves. They themselves overate. Which Marsha points out. The point is, Shmuel figures that way it's healthier for you. And Shmuel being a doctor, as we learned yesterday, he knows what's healthy. Rav Yechanan says, you do like this. Maybe in term of my isay b'dalay onis, you take an ox from its feeding place, from where it's grazing out in the meadows, where it's never one which has never that's never had to do work. The chicken that comes from the garbage heaps where it pecks around and finds all the food at once, where again it's never had to work at laying eggs, and that's the Baburim Avusim of the pasuk. And in fact, he's saying that Avusim doesn't just refer to the birds; it refers to all the animals mentioned in the pasuk. That all of them were animals that had never been used for work, and therefore their meat is the most delicate, and they taste the best. Rav Yechanan says in this connection, the best kind of animal meat is from a shur, is from an ox, and the best among the birds is a chicken. One of the points of that, I think the Maharal says, is he's telling us, what should you use? L'kavod Shabbos. What's the best? You should have the best kind of food, L'kavod Shabbos. If you're having animal meat, it should be beef. If you're having bird meat, it should be chicken.
And between the two?
Doesn't say. Whichever you have a preference for. Some people like beef, some people like chicken. Amar Amemer. Amemer says, here's another explanation of the Baburim Abusim. Zagsa Uchmasa, it's a black hen. Bebatnissa. Rashi says two explanations of Bebatnissa. One is that it's fattened up in the house, like it's able to wander all around the house and eat whatever it wants. Or the other explanation, Rashi says, is Batnissa means it has a big stomach. The Mishtak Chabena Atzri, which is always around among the wine presses, so it eats the grape seeds, and therefore it becomes
Bayatri
is a place where they press grapes. So therefore it eats the grape seeds, and therefore it becomes very fat from that. It's very very fattening, nutritious stuff. And the bird becomes so fat, Dolemakya Pasya Kanya, that it can't even step over a stick that's lying on the ground. And that's the kind of Baburim Avosim that Shlomo had for his Now that we're done with that, now we're going to go from here almost till the Mishnah, analyzing the story of Avraham Avinu in detail. Pretty much, by the way,
with the Malachim.
Pretty much everything we know about that story, everything that we learn in Cheder, and everything that our kids tell us when they come home from Cheder, pretty much all of it comes from our Gemara.
Yeah.
the Pasuk says, Vela Boko Rots Avraham, the Pasuk says that Avraham ran to the cattle and he took, he said, Ben Boko Rach Latoy. So Amar Yehud Amar Rav, Ben Boko Recha, the word Ben Boko means one animal. Rach Shnaim, the word Rach teaches us they took a second one. Vitoiv Shlosha, and the word Toiv means they took a third one. The question is, the Emachad, maybe it only means one animal. Kedamri and Shivakach Vatav, like people say, a tender good calf. Yeah, they're just adjectives for the one animal. The answer is, Imkein Lichtiv Rach Toiv. If that's the case, you didn't need the vav there. It should have said ben boker rach toiv. That is a tender, good. My vatoiv, what do you mean, and good? Shmam another drasha. Therefore, that teaches us that it's meant to be darshan, that it means another animal that was good.
Okay. Rach toiv is also lashon be'adam.
But it's still, because the idea is, rach toiv, meaning it's good because it's tender. Rach v'toiv are like two different unrelated adjectives. They go together. So therefore, that's it. Okay, the question is, ema trei. Fine, but in that case, then you have two. Ben boko rach and v'toiv. The answer is, mit toiv le drasha, rach nami le drasha. Fine, but since we found that the word toiv is meant for the drasha, to teach us that there was another one, then we can also assume that the pasuk is telling us the word rach also to teach us that the drasha, that there was another animal there as well. So therefore, three.
So why the drasha didn't say the vav for the other one?
Because it didn't have to. Once it says the vav by one of them, then yeah. Masiv Rava Barhula, Vitamer of Hoshia, Vitamer of Nothing but of Hoshia. The Pasuk says, Vayitin Anar, he gave to the boy, meaning Yishmael, Vayimahar Lapis Oisai, and he hurried to make it, to prepare it. So it's implying there was only the one animal. The answer is no. Kolchad Bachad, Yahavi the Narachad. It means there wasn't just one boy over there. Each animal he gave to a different boy, to a different young man, to prepare so that way it'll get done as fast as possible. Okay, what about the Pasuk says, Vayukachema Bacholov and Abakar Ashrasa? He took cream and milk and the calf which he had made, which he had prepared, Vayit, the calf, singular, Vayit in the Pneim, and he put it in front of them. So again, Lachor only one calf. And the answer is, Dekamakamam, Dematya Asilaka, Aisilakamayo. Each one, as it was ready, he immediately brought it out to them. But after all, there were three.
One by one?
One by one, but all three, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that a minhag to bring all the food together instead of...
But like this, he wanted it to come out as fast as possible, so yeah. Okay, the lama leads law. So fine, then the question is, after all, why do you need three calves? Tiski b'chav, taka shouldn't one be enough? Because he wanted to serve them three tongues with mustard. Tongue is a delicacy, Rashi points out. Marshall also refers to a famous story where Rebbe once tells his servants to go to the market and buy the best food, and he comes back with a tongue, and then he tells them to buy the worst food, and he also comes back with a tongue, and the lesson for the Talmidim is the tongue can be the best thing or the worst thing, depending on what you do with it. But the point is, tongue is a delicacy. And each animal has one tongue. The Chisuni on the Pasuk points out there's another practical reason why he wanted to serve them tongue. It doesn't need to be skinned. It's ready-made. It comes ready.
You have to cut it,
fine, but it comes ready-made off the animal, pretty much. You just have to cook it or whatever, or roast it or whatever, yeah. What about mustard? So the hoarder, the mustard is again because it's the royal way of eating things. For example, the Gemara tells us in Chulin that when the Kohenim ate their portions of the Karbanos, if they didn't have a particular preference, that they were allowed to eat it, as we say every day in Davening, b'chol machol, however they want to prepare it. But if they didn't have any particular preference, then they were supposed to eat it roasted and with mustard because that's the way of kings. So for Pashtus, that would be the reason. Marshall points out another thing, though, that we find that since the Pasuk is using the word Rach V'toiv, the words Rach V'toiv have the same gematria as the word Chagol, which means mustard. Rach V'toiv has the same gematria. Off by one, but okay, you find it can be off by one, as the word Chagol, which means mustard. So there's that, yeah.
Who said that?
The Marshall said that, yeah. Amar of Tanchum Bachani Loi, Lo'ilam Ayishana Adam Min HaMinag, a person should never act differently than the local minhag. Because we see Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim to receive the luchos, and he didn't eat the whole time that he was there. And he didn't eat bread. Malach Hasharet, the Yodel Amat of Achol Lechem, and the Malach Hasharet came down here to earth, and they ate bread. Luchos Malachim don't need to eat, but the Minhag HaMakom is you eat, so they ate. Okay, the question is, Achol how could I done? Still, what do you mean they ate? The fact is, Malachim don't eat. They're ruchniyistic creatures.
Right.
The answer is Ela Eman Nira Kamisha Achol Veshatsu. No, it means they at least appeared to eat and drink. They at least went through the motions of eating and drinking, kind of.
Right.
Yeah. which, by the way, Tosfos points out from Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, that says that actually they literally did eat and drink because of the covet of Avraham Avinu. So it goes even further than Ogamara. They literally, they went beyond their usual nature, which is to not eat and drink, and ate and drank because of the covet of Avraham.
And it means nothing to them to eat that.
That's the point. But because of the, because it's the Minhag HaMakom, because of the covet of Avraham. Yeah. Yeah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Kol ma sha'asa Avraham l'malachi ha'sharis ba'atmai asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'vanav ba'atmai. Whatever Avraham did for these three malachim by himself, later on Hashem did the same parallel things for his children in the Midbar, also Kav Yachol by himself. Whatever Avraham sent a messenger to do is what Avraham had a messenger, and that was what Hashem had a messenger, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, do for the Jewish people. Let's go through them. Avraham ran to the cattle, and parallel to that, a wind came from Hashem and brought them the slug. Avraham brought them the meat himself, and therefore Hashem brought them the meat. It was a negative thing, but still, I mean, there were two different kinds of slav.
Why was it negative?
Because they didn't really need it. They were just complaining about it. But still, we see the point is when the Eibishter gave it to them, then it came directly from him. It wasn't that Moshe had to stick out a stick or any such thing. Yeah. Vayikachem avacholov. Then it says that Avraham took cream and milk to serve to the malachim. Meaning the food, and parallel to that, the Eibishter says, I will rain down for you bread from Shemayim. Which, by the way, I mean, what about the bread that Abraham said? The Gemara is going to tell us later, he never ended up serving that bread because it became tamei, as we will see. So therefore, the taka wasn't any bread, but the cream and milk. And one of the other mafarshim, I think the Tertos Chaim, says a different reason. Bread is a basic thing. Anytime a guest comes, any person would know, any halfway decent person would know to serve bread. Chem of a cholov is something unusual. So therefore, corresponding to that, Hashem gave them one.
Bread and water was the main thing.
Yes. Also, Marshall points out there's a connection between the mon and milk anyway. We know that the mon could taste like anything, just like the Gemara tells us in Yuma and the whole sugya about the mon over there, that just like a baby when it nurses from its mother, it tastes whatever she last ate. So therefore, there's a certain similarity between the mon and milk. Continuing, Avraham was standing by them under the tree. Corresponding to that, the Eibishter says to Moshe, Hinini oimed l'chanecha shama atzur v'goyim. I will stand before you on the rock, but by the rock when you hit it to produce water. The pasuk continues, Avraham hoylech imam l'shalchem. At the end of the visit, Avraham went with them to do levaya, to send them off, just to see them off. Corresponding to that, Hashem hoylech l'fneim yoyim, Hashem went before the Jewish people by day, leading them. Yukach no ma'amayim. On the other hand, Avraham says, let there be brought water, implying that he's not doing it himself. He's asking somebody else in his household to bring water. Corresponding to that, the Eibishter doesn't bring water himself. Instead, he delegates to Moshe, the kisa batzur v'yotim menemayim v'shasurahim. You should hit the rock, and water will come out of it, and the people will drink. So that's what we're saying. However, the Gemara says, pliga d'rab chama v'rab chanina. This that we just said disagrees with what Rav Chama, Rav Chanina says, namely the specific detail that we're saying that because Avraham stood by them under the tree, therefore corresponding to that, the Eibishter stood by the rock watching when Moshe hit it. Rav Chama, Rav Chanina has a different explanation of what they got in the schus of Avraham standing there by the tree. He says, the schus of three things that Avraham did, the Jewish people later on were zoich of the three things. In the schus of the cream and milk, they got the man, like we just said. This is the difference, that in the schus of Avraham standing over them, they received the amuda onam, the pillar of pillar of cloud that stood there and then protected them and led them the way, etc. Yeah. And the schar yukach no matnayim zochol beir shal miriam, and in the schus of Avraham saying that water should be brought, they were zochot to beir shal miriam. The machlokas is over what happened because of Avraham standing. Is it the amuda onam, or is it the Eibishter standing there when Moshe hit the rock? Next, the pasuk says, "Yukach na matnayim v'rachtu raglechem." Avraham says to the malachim, "Let there be brought, please, a little water and wash your feet." What's the inyan? They first have to wash their feet. Amar Rav Yana b'Rabbi Shmuel, Amar Loi. They said to him, "Chibavim chashatonu." What do you suspect us of being Arabs? Shemishtachim la'abak raglechem, that they bow to the dust of their feet. what's the idea of bowing to the dust of their feet, by the way, is it sort of many Mefarshim talk about it. It also talks about, and it's, well, obviously, I've thought about why specifically the dust of their feet. They were traders and travelers. So they attributed that, they thought of their trade and their travel or whatever, that would just, to us, we look at it as a keli to parnasa, which comes from Nevishtah. They looked at it as that is their actual source of parnasa. Therefore, it's something worth worshiping, and therefore they worship it.
Because the
dust represents, you know, you travel around, you're working hard, you know, they worship that idea.
It comes from the earth, it's
more the idea that they figure their panasa comes because of their traveling around and working and whatever, rather than realizing that that's only, as we do, that that's only a keli for what comes min hashamayim. So he says, let there be brought water and you'll wash your feet. Lechura because he suspects them of being Arabs who worship the dust of their feet, and he doesn't want it, but it's Zorah in his house. So they're saying to him, V'chibavim chashatonu, you suspect us of being Arab, shem shtachlim la'avakrat lehem, where they bow to the dust of their feet. K'vayotzim meni Yishmol. Yishmol has already come out of you. He's the one who does that. Don't suspect us of doing that.
So at that point,
Yishmol was already born, but in other words, Rashi says, Harogil lachis kein. Yishmol is already in the habit of doing that. And in fact, one of the Mefarshim says that that's when they say to him, when they answer him in the pulpit, kein tafta, after he gives the whole thing, what we're going to do, yukachna ma'amayim, ve'echa paslechem, etc., they say to him, kein tafta kasher dibarto. So you should do as you've said. One of the Mefarshim says, actually, what they meant is a little bit of a criticism based on what the Gemara is saying over here. They're saying to him, yes, you should be doing that. You should make sure that Yishmael, who is a member of your household, is doing that, is washing the dust off his feet rather than bowing down to it. Going back to the beginning of the story, the pasuk is Vayera Elav Hashem Be'Eloni Mamre. Hashem appeared to him in Eloni Mamre. He was sitting at the entrance to the tent in the heat of the day.
Who is Mamre?
Mamre was one of Avraham's friends. They have Ono, Eshkol, and Mamre, the three locals, the three Knanim who were Avraham's close allies over there. We first hear of them in Parshas Lech Lecha, that's by the war with the four kings. Rashi mentions on the pasuk that Abraham had gone to consult with each one of them about the mitzvah of milah, and Mamre told them, "Do it publicly. Don't be afraid of people. People will be turned off to Yiddishkeit or whatever by it." So therefore, in the schutz of that, they should appear in his portion.
He didn't own the land. Mamre owned this portion.
So Mamre owned this portion, and Abraham was a tenant over there, basically. Yeah. Remember, Abraham didn't own any land in Eretz Yisrael, so he bought Maros Machpelah, which is many years after.
He was traveling.
Yeah. So, what's this in the heat of the day? What was going on? That day was the third day from Avraham Avinu's milah. So Hashem came to ask about Avraham's welfare, to be mevakecholav. The Eibishter took out the sun from its sheath to make it exceptionally hot, So that tzaddik, Avraham, shouldn't be bothered with guests like this. It's so hot, nobody's going to want to be on the road. Well, Avraham wasn't going to sit for that. There have to be guests. Shadri Eliezer, Mefak Lebaro. So he sent Eliezer to go look around, to go see if there are guests, if there are travelers around. Nafak V'layashkach. Eliezer went and then looked, and he didn't find anybody. And he comes back and reports, there's nobody. Omar and Avraham says, Lo Mehem Nalach, I don't believe you. And the Gemara says, because, what do you mean? I mean, Shor Eliezer is a good guy, but he figured, okay, maybe he's trying to hide the truth. He realizes I'm in pain or whatever, and he wants to not be Matriach. I'm not going to put up with that. And the Gemara says, by the way, Hainu Da'amri Tamon, this is like the expression they say in Eretz Yisrael, Leit Heminusa Ba'abdi. There's no trustworthiness among slaves. So even a slave who's on a fairly high level as they go, like Eliezer, still Abraham couldn't trust him implicitly.
And he said he's horror.
He is, yeah, but the point is that there's a certain degree that you can't trust in him. Nafak Yehusa, Abraham himself goes out to the door of the tent to see if anybody's passing by. And then he sees the Eibishter, the Shekhinah, is standing there by the door. That's why in the pasuk over there, Avraham says to the Eibishter, don't pass by from your servant once he sees the malachim. In other words, he says, so to speak, he says to the Eibishter, wait here, let me deal with them Let me take care of them, and then we'll get back to our conversation. The Gemara mentions in Shabbos, the famous thing. This is where we learn Gdolach Nosasochem, Makbalas Pnei Shchina, that the having guests is greater than welcoming the Shchina, because we see that Avraham asks the Eved to wait, to hold on while he takes care of the guests. Kibben Dechaza Dekaasa V'shari. But then the Eivishter, so to speak, sees that Avraham is sitting over there and bandaging and loosening and retying his bandages on the Mila. Omar, so the Eivishter says, Lava Urachara, make him hopper. It's not Derech Eretz, it's to stand over here. Shiner Dechtiv, and there you have the next pasuk, by Yisrael Eina Bayar, that Avraham lifts up his eyes and he sees, Vihine Shloisha Anoshim Nitzavim Olav, he sees three men standing nearby him, and he saw and he ran towards them. So what's the double and he saw, and what's first they're all of next to him, and then Vayaras, you have to run. Same kind of thing. Me'ikra also come all day. They first came and stood right next to him. Again, they saw he had the same tsar, he was dealing with his bandages. They also, like the Eivishter himself, said it's not Derech Eretz to stand here, and therefore they started moving away, and therefore Avraham had to run to get them. Who are these three men? They are Michal, Gabriel, and Rafal. Michal, each one had a job to do. Michal, Shabbal of Asir, Sara. Michal came to give Sara the news that she's going to have a baby, because Michal is the sire of the Jewish people, not like every one of the 70 nations has a sire. We don't, our sire is not the one we get our Ashba to, like the Goyim, but Michal is like our defender in Shemaim, so therefore he's the one. Who comes? He's the one who comes to announce that there's going to be a Jewish people. There's going to be a Yitzchak.
How come Gabriel comes before Rafael? In that situation, Rafael should have come first. But he was wrong.
Rafael came to heal Avram. Fine.
What did he cite it last?
Oh, why he listed? No, because I don't know. Rafael Shabbal Rafael Avram. Rafael came to heal Avram. Gabriel also lamed chel sedaim, and Gabriel went to overturn sedaim.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Question is, what ksiv ayver shnei amalachim sedaim of erev? Okay, but later on it says the two malachim came to Sodom. Which one is missing? The answer is Da'az and Michal, the Behadel, Sheiz Vilaloy. Michal went along with Gabriel to save Lot. Now Tosus points out the famous
Gabriel
thing. So Gabriel has only one job to do during this whole trip. His job is to overturn Sodom. But he comes to Avraham first. He comes to Avraham first because he has to join with the other malachim. He has to join with Michal to go to Sodom. So he joins also to be one of the guests by Avraham. Later on, then Raphael leaves because he's done with his job healing Avraham, and then Michal and Gabriel head on down to Sodom.
And Michal has two jobs to tell Zara.
So Tosfos talks about that. We know the famous thing that one malach doesn't do two shlichos. So Tosfos says that, first of all, the one way you could look at it is each one is a separate mission. He's told to give the message to Sarah. He's done with that. Now begins a new mission, go to Sodom and save Lot. So it's not one malach doing two missions. He's doing one, and then first he does the one, and then he finishes it, and then he's told about the other one. Not so much then he's told, but when we say in malach oise beis shlichi, as Tosfos said, the first explanation is only when we're talking about in one place he can't do two jobs. But it's two different places, one by Avraham, one by Sodom.
So what would be two jobs in one place?
Two jobs would be in one place. It would be, let's say, for example, he'd been the one to come tell Sarah as well as heal Avraham.
Okay.
That would be.
Right. But this can be ordered twice in two different places,
yeah. Then Tosfos,
at the same time being ordered.
Yeah. Then Tosfos also talks about the idea of saving Lot and healing Avraham can be considered two facets of the same thing. So therefore, Tosfos quotes from the Medrash, Rashi also mentions it on the Pasuk, but actually it's the other way around. It's Raphael who's the one who went to save Lot. So he healed Avraham and then went along with Gabriel to go to Sodom. So Raphael is doing two things that involve saving Lot, healing Avraham and saving Lot.
What did Gabriel have to do?
He could have gone directly to Sodom, but as long as he's with me, as long as you have to be with Michal or Raphael to go to Sodom, and they have to first stop off by Avraham to do their mission over there, then he joined them for that also.
Actually, the one malach who ate there and healed Avraham, the first in the same place.
Well, eating is not really a shlichus.
He only did it to make Avraham happy.
Oh, okay.
That's well. All
right. The Gemara says, "Dekanami." As a matter of fact, you can be medayek from the pasuk that's how it was. That only one malach was involved in overturning Sodom, even though throughout the story with Lloyd it mentions two people, two malachim, because it says he overturned these cities. Like the Vayapur doesn't say they overturned. Shramina, that proves that there was only one malach. Gabriel was overturning it, and the fact that there was another malach there was the one who was there to save life. Michal according to Argamar, Gabriel according to the Medrash. Speaking, okay, so now, so now, what's the difference in the behavior of the Malachim when they're by Avraham, and Avraham offers to bring water and serve them food, etc., they say, go ahead, do as you said. Whereas by Lot, it says he begged them a lot before they'd even come to his house. What's the difference?
Lot begged them?
Yeah, when they came to Sodom, it says that Lot sees them, he bows to them, he offers them to come to his house. They say, Lot, we'll just sleep overnight in the street. He begged them, and then by Yisroel, all day, they came to his house.
Doesn't
Why? What?
Doesn't they also sleep in a hotel?
No. There were no hotels in Sodom. The hotels were the kind where they, The hotels were the kind where they torture the guests or whatever, all the famous stories. Yeah, we'll learn in Sanhedrin and next year about the Shem about it.
That's good.
Okay, no. So Rabbi Lozen says, from here we learn that when you're offered something, if it's a lesser person, you should first decline it out of respect, as derech eretz. But if it's a great person, don't decline, just accept it right away. Don't be humble at that point. So therefore, so they immediately accepted Abraham's offer, whereas Lot, who's a lesser person, they can be polite and then make it big first. Siv Echa Paslechem. Now at the beginning, Abraham says, I'll serve you a little piece of bread. I'll take a piece of bread. And then later on, you have that Abraham ran to the cattle and he served them a whole meal. So what is that? Here we see that tzaddikim say a little, but they do a lot. They do much more than they said. And on the other hand, Rishoyim, whereas when it comes to the Rishoyim, they say a lot. They talk big, but then they end up not even doing a little bit. What about Minolon? Where do we know that last part from? May Ephron. We know it from the story of Ephron, right? When Avraham bought Mars and Machpelah. Because originally Ephron says that it's a land of 400 shekels. So he's willing to sell it for only 400 shekel. All the soif ksiv, but at the end it says, Vayishma Avraham al Ephron, Vayishkal Avraham al Ephron, it's a kesef asher dibar ba'ozni b'nechais. It says Avraham listened to Ephron, and Avraham weighed out to Ephron the silver of which he had talked about in the hearing of the sons of Chais. Arba meis shekel kesef over la soichu, 400 kesef shekel of silver over la soichu, which is current by the merchants, which is accepted by the merchants. What does that mean? Delo shokum in ele kantri. It means that Ephron was not willing to accept regular shekel. He demanded kantri. Not just the best of the best, a much larger amount. Kantri, Rashi explains, is something that has the value of 100 mana. Now, a mana consists of 25 shekels. So therefore, each of these kantri is worth 25,000 regular shekels.
So
there's a million shekels that comes out altogether. Yeah, 400 times 25,000. Yeah. And why is that? How do you get kantri from shekel? Because there are places where they call this kantri, they call this large measure, they call it a shekel. Ephron demanded over la socha, something that anywhere in the world it will be accepted as a shekel. So therefore, it had to be the largest possible shekel. So we see that Ephron was first willing to sell it for what seemed like a fairly cheap price, and in the end he takes a really inflated price. Well, the Gemara doesn't mention that. I was thinking about that also. The Gemara's not mentioning that, maybe because the Gemara says, okay, he was saying, but fine. I mean, it's a normal thing when you're bargaining with somebody, he offers, he's going to give it for free. He doesn't necessarily mean it seriously. You could argue it's an asmachta, maybe, but once he names the price, Alameh Shekel Kesef, he should have held to that. It's actually 400, not a million.
Ask for more, maybe just
that
he didn't refuse.
Asher Diber, that he spoke. That's the point that the pasuk says that Avraham weighed out the amount that Asher Diber ba'oznei b'nei Ches, that he spoke of in the hearing of the children of Ches. Ephron is the one who mentioned the 400 shekels. Avraham never said anything about that. So therefore, when we say that he ended up paying him 400 kantri, it means Ephron must have been the one who said, by the way, when I say 400 shekels, I don't mean 400 regular shekels. I mean 400 kantri.
That he said afterwards.
After the deal, yeah. All right. Getting back to the story of Avraham and the Malachim, Ksiv Kemach or Ksiv Sola. The passage says that Avraham says, he runs to Sarah, he says, Mahari Shlosh Seim Kemach Sola, hurry and prepare three Sa of Kemach Sola. now, as we had before in the story of Shlomo's meal, kemach and solos are two different grades of flour. Solos is the good stuff. Kemach is the not so good stuff.
The raw, not raw.
Not raw, really. So they usually translate solos as fine flour. I used to always think it meant it was more finely ground.
Right.
But it turns out actually based on a Gemara in Menachos that described how it was with the Menachos, the other way around. Solos is stuff that has a little bit of body to it. If you stick your hand in it, for example, you won't get dust all over your hand. Kemach is floury, powdery stuff. So solos is a little bit larger, pieces.
Crumb.
So what?
It's unrefined.
No, they're both refined, but the difference is that solos is the good stuff, is the slightly larger pieces, and kemach is the dust that comes out at the end, which is dusty. You know, either a lot of it goes to waste, whatever. Yeah. Okay. So which was it? So Rabbi Yitzchak says, from here we see that women are more stingy when it comes to guests than men. Now, how do we see that? Where do we see that in the pasuk? So, there's a lot of different explanations. Rashi starts out by saying what it means is the kemach and the solos over here was two different people saying. She said kemach, he replied solos. There's even, I think, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says it may have been like a question. He says Mahari Shlosh Seim. She asks kemach, he says solos. So therefore, you see that she was prepared to offer them kemach. On the other hand, there's a verse from the Baal Shem Tov, it's wrote in Kesher Shem Tov, that says the other way around. He says kemach. She says no, kemach's not good enough for the guests. We need solos. But the fact that the pasuk needs to mention that shows Sarah was an exception. But normally, ishat Sarah ne'ab ba'orchem yoytim abish, and therefore the pasuk needs to point out that Sarah was an exception to that rule. The Baal Shem Tov says. With that said, so how do you say women are more stingy? Yes, Pesach. And so in Chassidus, in a number of places, it talks about the idea when we look at it from the point of view of the spheres of Chesed and Gvura. Chesed is the masculine attribute. Gvura is on the female side. The side of Bina Gvura Hod is all the female side. Gvura means limiting how much there should be, because there needs to be chesed, because you want to be mashpia. There also needs to be gvura to concentrate how much should there be, where should it be used most effectively, etc. That's what gvura is all about. So therefore, Sarah and women in general, being the representatives of gvura, they're the ones who have to narrow down. Okay, so we need there's going to be given to guests, but how should it be done most effectively? That's the tzara now. So it's not meant as a negative. It's not meant as a negative thing, but rather as to make it more properly directed, so it doesn't go to waste.
So it's real as they're connected.
Indeed. Yes,
it's gvura.
Steve Lushi Vasi Ugos. Next, the pasuk continues that he says to her, "Knead the dough and make bread." Ugos also means matzah, which is why there's one opinion that this happened on Pesach. A couple of psukim later, it says that Avraham took the cream and the milk, and he took the young calf. What happened to the? He didn't bring the bread. What happened? He didn't bring the bread in front of them. What happened to the bread? Omer Ephraim Makshah Talmidu Shirav Meir Mishmei Did a Meir Makshah. By the way, Rashi doesn't mention over here. I think it's in the Medrash that Makshah either means the one who asks a lot of good kashas, or it means the one who watches the kishurim, the cucumbers, while they're growing. Anyway, he says in the name of a mayor, Talmidish of a mayor, the Talmud of a mayor says Mishmei did a mayor. Avraham Avinu oichol chulin b'tara haya. Avraham Avinu used to eat even his chulin in a state of tara. Technically, you're allowed to eat chulin which are tamei when they're not truma or kodshim or whatever. Avraham held to a higher standard where even his chulin were always tahor. The Sarah that day became Nida, so therefore, as she was making the bread, it became Tomei, and therefore he couldn't serve it. Mm-hmm. Now, why couldn't he serve it to his guests? So one of the Mephoreshim, I think the Eitz Yosef, I think, on Ein Yaakov says, because we can assume that Abraham sat and ate with them to make them feel comfortable, he wouldn't have eaten the bread, therefore he can't serve it to them. Pasuk continues, Vayomru Ela Vayei Sarah Yishtecha. They say to him, where is Sarah your wife? Vayomru Hinei Ba'el. And he says, behold, she's in the tent. What is that? We are being informed over here that Sarah was tzniusik, which actually
it
needs to be pointed out. And as a matter of fact, actually, many of the Mepharshim say, Rashi I think also says that on the pasuk, that what it means is the Malachim ask the question in order that Avraham should have to answer Hinei Ba'ohel, and therefore make him and therefore realize all over again how tzniusik she is. Because it's good to constantly be reminded of the milos of your spouse. So
the malachim, they don't.
It's fine
then.
But they're pointing it out to Avraham. Avraham is being asked the question. When he answers, Hinei ba'oil, it's meant to evoke in him a feeling. Yes, she's in the tent.
Here's
the toilet. Look what a great wife I have.
Here's
the toilet. Okay, thank you. Okay.
See, it's okay. Not like flour.
Yeah.
Pick on.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. Okay.
It's called durum wheat.
Okay. That's the thing. The Malach HaShoros knew perfectly well that Sara is in the tent. So why do they ask a question to which the answer is going to be boil? To make her more precious to her husband, that he should realize all over again that she's more sneistic than regular women. Yes, he knows that. Avraham knew for many years already. Rashi mentioned in Parshat Lech Lecha, he didn't know your daiti. Now I first know that you're an Isha Yifras Mare. But nevertheless, it's good to be reminded. It's good to be reminded, yeah. Rabbi Yosef B'Chanina says there's another reason why they asked, because they wanted to send her the Koistro Bracha. They benched. Now there's a Koistro Bracha from benching. You send it around to everybody in the household, so they should share in the Bracha.
They could have said, this is for your wife. They didn't have to ask, where is she?
Ah, okay, but like this, they can send it, like this, they can send it to her. Like this, there's a Rashi Sicha on this parasha with Rebbe. Most of this piece of Gemara over here about when they said, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, and the Rebbe analyzes in great detail the wording of the Rashi as compared with the Gemara over here. One thing is that the Tznua Hoyser is a general statement that we have three reasons why they said Ayei Sarei Shtecha, which we just did two, and we're going to do the third. The point is, each of them, the fact that she was sneistic is an introduction to the other two. She was sneistic, therefore they made sure to send her the Koistra Baracha in a sneistic way. And similarly with the next thing about Shiyishalot and Baksan, Shalai. Tony Mishum Rav Yosi, Loma Nakud al Ayei Shvei Elov. Why are there dots in the Sefer Torah over the letters Aleph Yud Vav in the word Elov? So now the word Elov means to hit. The word Ayoi, if you take out the Lamed, Rashi points out on the Pasuk, the rule is if you have a word that has more Nekudah, that has more dotted letters than undotted letters, then you darshan the dotted ones. So therefore, like, we ignore the Lamed, so to speak, and darshan the Aleph Yud Vav. Ayoi means where is he? Meaning, Limda Torah Derech Eretz Sheyishal Adam Bachsan. The Torah thereby teaches us a point of Derech Eretz that you should ask about the welfare of your hostess. How does that come out of this? Rashi says, because they didn't need to ask where is she, because they knew that she's in the tent. So if we have dots on the letters ayay, then it comes to teach us that we darshan from that. Why did they ask where she is? Because of a matter of derech eretz, not that they really needed to know.
Didn't we say that every time she's in the tent, there's a light? Couldn't they see there was light on the
No, it doesn't say that. No, it says that her candles burned from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, and there was a cloud of the Shekhinah on her tent. Fine, doesn't mean necessarily only when she was in the tent. The Horan, when she went out to when she went out to for one reason or another, the cloud would move with her.
Cloud would move with her.
I don't know. Anyway, the point is they didn't need to know. They're Malachim. They know. According to this, the point is they asked because it's derech eretz to ask about the welfare of your hostess. Tosfos learns differently that the point of ayoi means where is he? So therefore, what we learn is just as they ask Avraham where is Sarah, they also ask Sarah where is Avraham, meaning how is Avraham doing? Rashi mentions that on the pasuk also, yeah. Which, by the way, the Rebbe points out in that same sicha, the point of having dots over it, dots usually weaken the force of a word, also comes to teach us again the sneistic part. They did ask, but in a sneistic way. So they still made sure to do it in a way that comports with the dinim of knias. Okay, the question is, what do you mean to ask about the welfare of your hostess? Shmuel ain't shaylem b'shlang ishaklal. Shmuel Duch said you don't ask about the welfare of a woman at all because it may cause an inappropriate closeness between them. The answer is aide baila shaymi. It's different when it's through her husband. So Rashi says, in other words, you don't ask her directly, how are you doing? But you can ask her husband, how is she doing?
This is in the end of Kedushin.
Yeah, the end of Kedushin, it talks about it, yeah. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that no. What the Gemara is saying over here is you can ask, where is she? But to even ask her husband, how is she doing, Tosfos says that would be awesome. Yeah. There's a lot of of discussion.
What do we do now?
What do we do nowadays? So there's a lot of discussion of among the Achronim and then among the Achronim about the exact parameters of this. Does it even include, for example, just saying hello? Is there a difference maybe if you know the person or not? Is there a difference maybe if for example, if the person is not feeling well to ask her husband how she's doing, that's different. The Taz says, for example, yes.
Isn't there a deen that you're not supposed to pronounce someone's wife's name? When you talk about her, you just say about your wife?
I had never heard of that. I don't know.
You're talking about Gur, and they don't even call the name of the wife, and they don't call the name of the husband to each other?
I don't know. That's about Gerach. It could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Only because they take, like, Tanoi. What do they call it? Conditions. Tanoi.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right, onward.
They don't have to do it, but they let us.
Same with yes and how they do.
Okay. All right, onward. Let's continue. The pasuk says, Sora says on herself, Achrei bloisi hoisali edna. She says, after I'm worn out, I have youth. What does that mean? It means she actually had it. Omer of Chista, after her flesh was worn out from age and she had lots of wrinkles, her flesh became soft, her skin became soft again, the wrinkles unwrinkled, and her original beauty came out again. And that's when we said that she became nidir. Now, on that day, when the Malachim came, that's when we said she became nidir before also. Remember, she was 89 years old at the time, for the positive test. She had long since stopped being nidir. But now her youthfulness sort of comes back.
She looked in the mirror, and she's like 20 years old again.
I guess so, yeah.
But I don't understand. Of course, all these simanim are happening. Why did she surprise them?
So the Medrash says on that, actually, that's why she says, Badoni Zaki. She's saying, I feel youthful now, but my husband is still old. Of course, we're not going to have children because of that.
She was the one that laughed. I thought didn't laugh.
But that's the point. She's laughing because, fine, I'm young again. What about Abraham? How is he possibly going to have children?
She said
she didn't laugh.
That's one way of explaining it. But the Gemara is saying over here that no, she's saying as a statement of fact. It's true. After I became old, I became youthful again. Now, very nice. Something is obviously happening over here. But my master, meaning my husband, is old. What's going to happen as far as that? So that's the next thing. She says my master, my husband, is old.
She became young again. Obviously, there was a nest, and she couldn't get it to...
That's the problem. That's why there was a problem in her laughing. In fact, the Medrash goes on that and says that you sort of see that each of them sort of blame the other for the situation. At the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, Abraham says, how is it possible that Sarah, 90-year-old, is going to have birth? Now you have Sarah saying, how is it possible Abraham is old? Yes, Hashem says, you guys don't know what you're talking about.
The thing is that way after Sarah passed away, Abraham was still having children.
Yeah, ain't no phenomenon.
And that was
okay. Men have children much later.
Yeah, fine. Okay, anyway.
Ask any billionaires.
No, okay. Okay, so Siv Vajoni Zakin, on the one hand, you have the Pasuk says, she says, my husband is old. But then later on, when the Eivishter says to Avram, why did Sarah laugh? He says, how are you talking? That she could say, Vani Zakanti, that I'm old. Why didn't he report exactly what happened? The Eivishter did not tell Avraham exactly what Sarah said, as she had said. Tanad Ve'Rabbi Shmuel says, Gadol Shalom, we see the greatness of Shalom, Shafila HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shinaboy, that even the Eivishter changed the truth a little bit in order not to create friction between Avraham and Sarah. Now, what kind of friction is there going to be? Avraham knows perfectly well he's old, he knows what he's capable and not capable of. Other folk, you still don't report to a person what their spouse said, something negative about them. So that's even the Eivishter himself followed that. The pasuk of Shenema Vatitzchak Sarah Bekiru Vagoma, as the pasuk says, Sarah laughed within herself. She says Vadoni Zaken Ochtiv, but the next pasuk says Vayema Hashem Al Avraham Vagoma. Why is she saying Vani Zakanti? I'm old. So we see that they're able to change the truth. Yeah. Later on, after Sarah gave birth to Yitzchak, the pasuk says Vatoma Mimile La Avraham Enika Bonim Sarah. Who would have ever told Avraham? Or Rashi says on the pasuk over there, it means look how great is the one who told Avraham Enika Bonim Sarah that Sarah will nurse children. Women, children. I mean, she only had the one child. That day when Abraham weaned Yitzchak and also Sudik Dole, he made a big party, as the Post says. So now all the nations of the world are all making fun. And they're saying, look, you see this old man and woman who took some abandoned baby in from the street, and they claim he's our son. And not only that, they're making a big party like so everybody should believe it.
That's
a Latin Adar, yeah. Ma also Avraham Avinu. So what did Avraham Avinu do? Halach v'zimin kol gzoyle ador. He invited all the great prominent people of that generation. The sorei imenu zimnes nishesem, and sorei imenu invited all their wives. But kolachat v'achat hevia bna ima. Each one of these women brought her baby with her. Umei nikta loy hevia, but she did not bring her wetness with her. Which Marsha says this was part of the latzanus that they're saying. And you know, look at this now. Sarah can't even nurse her own baby, much less all of ours. You're gonna have a bunch of screaming babies over here, and she's not gonna be able to do anything about it because she's for sure old and dried up. V'nasa nes to Sarah Yemenu. So nes happened to Sarah. V'niftechu dadeh k'shnei mayonis. So two breasts opened up like two fountains. V'nika is cool. I mean, she nursed all of them. Matter of fact, the Medrash says on it actually that Sarah was being sneezed. You don't just uncover yourself in bed like that. So Avraham says this is not a time for sneezing. You got to show off the net. And she shows the pastors told the women, and then they're gushing forth.
It was the women's confession.
Yeah, the pastors, but still, it's not so sneezing.
They had a mechitza back then.
Yeah, but still. Still, people are making fun and saying, "In Sarah, Abbas Kishim Taylor, Shana Taylor, fine. Maybe Sarah can have a baby at 90 years old. Avraham ben Meir Shana Yolid. Avraham should have a child at 100." Miyad Nefach clapped upon him, Shul Yitzchok v'Nimna Avraham. Immediately, Yitzchok's face was changed so that it looks like Avraham, so it resembles Avraham. So you can see the family resemblance. Which, by the way, of course, you know, you have the obvious question that children usually look like their parents. What was the special mess in it? So it talks about chesedus. If you look at the ruchniyistic angle of it, Avraham was midas chesed. Yishmael personified midas gvura. It wouldn't be usual for Yitzchak to look like Avraham. The fact that he did is a special thing from the Amish day.
So they say he looks exactly like Avraham.
We'll see that in a few lines. Yeah. Possible. Kulam v'amru Avraham heard the Yitzchak. Immediately everybody cried out, called out, yeah, Avraham heard the Yitzchak, like it says in the Pasuk at the beginning of Torah. Yeah.
Now it's interesting that light looks like Avraham too.
To a certain extent, right? Yeah, no shemachem anachnu. Yeah, okay. Right. So, ad Avraham lo hayah zikna. Up till Avraham's time, there was no such a thing as old age. Which, by the way, Marsha says doesn't literally mean there was no such a thing as old age. People got old, and we just said before, Sarah was wrinkled, etc.
Yeah, right.
But it wasn't really that noticeable. It wasn't really that noticeable the difference in when a person is old versus when they're young. A person would grow up, they'd mature, and then after that their face would basically stay the same. Yeah, if you yourself would feel the wrinkles and you'd feel the aches and pains of old age or whatever. It wouldn't really be obvious to people on the street.
Years later when she passed away, she looked
yeah, also true. Yeah.
No, but how come said that her wrinkles went away?
But that's what I mean, like the internal wrinkles, sort of like you can feel in yourself that you haven't. Yeah. Okay. So that's part of it also, right? So somebody who wanted to speak with Avraham would end up talking with Yitzchak, or the other way around, because Avraham and Yitzchak looked exactly alike. Also, Avraham, Avraham ibn Adavin for Rachmanos, that there should be visible old age, yeah, white beard, wrinkles, etc. Shenemav Avraham Zuck and Baba Yom, and that's why the Pasuk mentions that Avraham was old.
Step too far.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So now you can tell the difference between the father and the son. Now you don't mix up people like that.
Can you tell the difference?
Yeah, that was the point.
Yeah, you could agree.
That was the next thing. Ad Yaakov might have a culture. Up until Yaakov's time, there was no such thing as sickness, the kind of sickness like a person has before they die. After Yaakov, Barachmi to have a culture. Yaakov Davin, that there should be such a thing, that there should be sickness before a person dies. So you have a chance to write his will. They said to Yosef, behold, your father is sick. Behold implies like the chiddush. It's something that never happened before. Another one. Up until Elisha's time, you never had a person who was very sick and then recovered from it. Also, Elisha, boy, Rachmi, Elisha came and Davin, that there should be, that a person should be able to be sick and still recover from it. Shenema, Elisha, as the prophet says, Elisha became sick with the illness from which he eventually died, which implies that he was previously sick other times, and then there was this one, his final illness. Turn it up on him. Shloisha Chaloyin Chaloy Elisha. Elisha was sick three times in his life. Echad shadochve legeichazi b'shtei yadav. One was because he pushed away geichazi with both hands. The story over there after Naaman was healed from the tzaraat, geichazi goes over there and then tricks Naaman into giving him some gold and then silver and other such stuff. Elisha is extremely angry at him and pushes him away. He says, you'll get Naaman's tzaraat, you'll never recover from it. And he pushed him away, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, he pushed him away b'shtei yadav, he pushed him away with both hands instead of it should be yamin mekareva to smell deicha. And for that, he was punished with a sickness. The Echad Shegira Dubin B'Tinoi, because another one was because he incited bears to attack the young children, the young boys. The story that we learned in Sota, he had healed the waters of Yericho, which were causing people to get sick. Now you have this group of lowlifes, this group of troublemakers come and start yelling and making fun of him. That's Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. As he cracked the Aleinu Samachim, he made the place bold and unprofitable for us. Until now, we made a good living selling water to the people of the city. Now we're bottled water, yeah. Now we're going to lose that. Elisha turns around, he sees them, he sees that they themselves are lowlifes, there's no chosim in them, he sees they're not destined to have any descendants who are, and so by Kalim Hashem Hashem, he curses them in the Eivishah's name, and two bears come out and kill 42 of them.
And so, there was a forest, and
whatever. The point is, it was in Soita.
Yeah.
Every year, when you learn Soita during Sfira, then you come across it.
My wife said that they use that expression in modern Hebrew.
They do, yeah. Lo dubim lo yar in modern Hebrew means it never happened.
Yeah.
That's not what it means in the Gemara.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyway, the point is, all true, they were lowlifes, they were Gershoyim, they were this, that, the other. Nevertheless, they're folks, 42 Jewish kids, and Elisha shouldn't have gotten so upset at them. So therefore, he became sick because of that. And then there was the third one, which was his final illness, with which he died. So the triple expression, chola is one sickness, et cholya means the second, ashiyamusbay is the third one. So that's where we see that he was sick 3 times. We'll continue tomorrow, Rav Hashem. Now done with the Agata, and we're back to
when he had a chance that he was
going
to come
in Sanhedrin. We had it in Sota. It was in Sanhedrin.
And they had all the people that got pushed away and almost came back and then...
There's only two, Gechazi and Oyser Ish, yeah.
And
Oyser Ish, Yoshka. Yeah. Yoshka.
I thought there was more.
Yeah, no.